in this topic of Shul Lekorim, a lot of people might think that what we're going to be looking at is the rabbi telling you why we shouldn't talk during davening. Okay, well, we all know that, so that's easy enough, but that's not why we're here. I mean, of course, it's a piece of it, but that's not what what the focus of the class is on. There's a lot more to shul decorum and proper conduct in shul that we don't typically look at. And the only apology that I have to make in advance is that I could format this a million times, and the way that I do it somehow between when I last format it and print it is that things misalign. So the things that should have been on one page ended up being slightly spilling over onto the next page. All right, not so bad. Okay, the first thing which we're going to be looking at is the question of makom kavua and how strict must we be about using and utilizing a makom kavua. Now, makom kavua is a concept many are familiar with, which is that I have a set place to daven. Now, unfortunately, in shuls, as I've talked about a number of times, some people tend to have an over sense of right to a place which is my place, so much so that if they come to shul and they find that somebody's sitting in their spot, they'll make a big deal about it. Now, of course, I think that we all understand that making a big deal about it and saying to somebody, "Excuse me, you're in my seat," is not the most polite conduct that a person can undergo, especially if a person's a newcomer and they don't know you and they don't know the shul, they don't know the practice. We had a funny story. Somebody came into the shul. Somebody who came relatively new, joined the shul a few months ago, and said that she came upstairs and she's looking at the chairs, and every single chair says on the back of it "Lifetime." She's like, "Oh, a lifetime member. I can't sit here." I told her afterwards. I said, "That's the name of the company that makes the chairs." So that's a nice misunderstanding, and that's okay. But as far as what makom kavua means. So the source of it is the Gemara in Brachos. So if you turn over from the cover page onto the back of the first page, you see the Gemara in Brachos, which says, so first of all, actually the part I didn't put in bold is actually a reminder to everybody who comes to Minyan, myself included, that the earlier we come, the better. Am Rabbi Yochanan b'shash HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'ba b'beisak nesef v'lamatza ba'asara. When the time comes for God to come to shul, and he doesn't find a minion present, in other words, God looks at God goes onto accbb.org, he clicks on the calendar, he sees that it says Shacharis is at 7:30, and he shows up at 7:30, and he sees that, thank God he sees here that there's a minion. So if he doesn't find a minion, then he gets angry. But if there's a minyan, it's supposed to take place, and you don't have 10 there, so God gets angry, as it says, "Madu abasi ve'inish karasi ve'inoneh." Why did I come? There's no person here. I'm calling out, and there's nobody answering. God gets upset because people are supposed to be davening, and they're not present. Okay, that's a different thing about timeliness. That's less about the decorum, but about coming on time. Am Rabbi Chalba, Am Rabbi Hunas. And now we're in the part which is in bold. Kol kaveh makom l'tfilasoh Elohei Avraham be'Ezra. The Gemara says, somebody who establishes a spot for his davening, the God of Abraham is with him. And then the Gemara has a little bit of an aside. Then it says, "Dechsiv ayishkem Avram baboker el hamakom asher macham." Avram gets up early in the morning and he goes to the place where he had stood previously to daven. And so that from there we learn ve'ein amid el tefila. When Avram gets up and he stands in that spot, we understand that it's for davening. And so the point is that if Avram is returning to the spot where he had davened previously, then that's what a makom kavua is. You're supposed to daven where you've davened before. But the question is, what does that mean? What does it mean that Avram davened where he had davened before? Avram's probably davening in the hills somewhere. Avram's davening on a mountaintop. Avram's davening in some open place next to a matseva, some monument that he had established. Is Avram going into the local shul and saying, "Hey, you, this is my seat"? Be hard pressed to do that, considering he was in a religion of one at the time, right? He was the only Jew. So we're going to look through the next few sources, and I cut to the chase in all of them, so we can get through them. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tefillah Nesi'as Kapayim that what does it mean tikun hamakom ketzad, to establish a place, koveh hamakom l'tfilaso tamid. You have a place where you daven always, but what does that mean? What does that mean? Tagalos Maimonides explains on the Rambam. He says, "Afil ba'osu be'isak neses lo yishanan makom tulaso pam bizavazo pam bizavazo." That he says, even if, according to his understanding of the Rambam, that even if when you daven in the same shul, you shouldn't daven one time over there, another time over there, another time over there. You shouldn't be jumping around. You should have a basic place where you daven. Now, if you actually go straight across to the other side of that, to the other column, where the Mishnah Berurah, Siman Sadi, Siv Kat Nesamach, and other commentaries have this as well. I think I also had the Magen Avraham on this, but I removed it in the interest of space. He says, Toch Dalet Amos Chashuv Makom Echad, Diev Shalat Samtze. He says, if you're within Dalet Amos, four cubits of your spot, that's considered your makom kavua. In other words, it's not about a specific seat; it's about an area, which essentially means that if you come into shul and you find somebody sitting in your seat, sit next to the person, sit behind the person, sit in front of the person. But that's your makom kavua, because your makom is not defined by one square seat; it's defined by an area of four amos away. Okay, which is one of the reasons why when somebody is in avelus, where are they encouraged to sit? At least four amos away, move away from the makom kavua, at least four amos away from their seat, because within four amos of their seat is still their seat, because it's all within that space. Okay. Now, under the Agados Manos, which you saw before, the Biur Chadash in the Rambam as well, he says, Ein dai b'mashi kavalo besak nesas lispalel. So his definition of makom kavua is that minimally a person should be davening in the same shul on a regular basis. That even in the shul where a person davens regularly, that's a makom kavua. Makom doesn't mean a specific spot, but it means a makom, a greater place where a person davens. That's what a person should establish for oneself. That in that place a person should also have a specific spot. Now, the Lechem Yehuda quotes this Rabbeinu Yonah, and a lot of people quote this tale about the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, the students of Rabbeinu Yonah, and they write the following. I'm still in the right column, just towards the bottom. Kasvut de'ein chiyuv kivuyas makom elo beso, that the concept of having a set place to daven is really only applicable in one's house, in your private house. In other words, sometimes you find yourself in a situation, you can't go to shul, you have to daven at home. So you're going to daven at home. So there should be one set spot in the house which is designated for when you have to daven at home. In other words, an area, if you have a study, if you have an office, if you have a place where there are some sfarim, whatever it may be. But that's where I daven when I daven at home. Not that one night I'm davening in my bedroom, another time I'm davening in my living room, another time I'm in my dining room. That you're davening, that there's a place in your house where you have set for davening. Yes, sir? Yeah, that anybody who's davening in the home should have, she could have her own makom kavua, and you have your own makom kavua. But the point is that wherever the davening is going to take place should be the regular spot. Doesn't mean, again, it's the same idea. It doesn't have to be a specific chair. But if you're davening in your den, you're davening in your den. If you always daven in your living room, you always daven in your living room. But it should be a makom kavua. They go on. Mitam the kivon the shekidesh makom echad tefila who muchan lashmas tefila yoter. Once you sanctified one spot to be the place where you daven, then it is more of a holy place where your davening is accepted. And therefore, in the shul, obviously he's disagreeing with what we saw in the Rambam before, or certainly in Agos Maimonides, who said you shouldn't be jumping around from corner to corner. He says that if in a shul, it doesn't matter if you go from corner to corner. Why? Because the shul is a makom kavua. And therefore, to be so caught up about a specific spot is ridiculously unnecessary. Kevon shekula makom tefila and ein hefresh ulasvar so. And according to that logic, efshalamar that tefila beisak neses beisak neses acherin lakpid. Even if you jump from shul to shul, it's not such a big deal. Dishnei makom tefila, because both of them are a makom kavua for davening. They may not be your specific chair. But the point is to be davening in a makom kavua, a place which is set for davening on a kavua basis, on a regular basis. Okay, and that's the main idea which we can take out of to say to people, what's your makom kavua? Your makom kavua is that you daven here, you daven on Chechasa, that's your makom kavua. What's your makom kavua? That you daven in a shul, wherever you daven. But it's a place that's set for davening, and that's established for davening, and that is a beautiful thing. Look at the very last source on that side. It says, Kol kovea makom lispalel kilu akifa mechitzos shabarzel. Anybody who has a set place for davening, it's as if you've established barriers made out of steel. In other words, it's like a protection of some kind for the person who does that. Now, the last thought that I want to look at, and there are the other sources here, they speak for themselves, but I want to look at the tzlach, because the tzlach is a very important thought that we need to bear in mind when we think about the concept of makom kavua, and especially getting all uptight about the makom kavua. Okay, yesh l'daktek. I mean, the bold in the tzlach, which is the bottom left source in this whole box on makom kavua. Yesh l'daktek ma anava shayech b'zesh shekovei makom l'tfila. So he says, he asks the question. He says, what kind of humility exists in a person who has a set place to davening? For davening. If there's a tircha of some kind, a burden, he needs to go to that specific place, maybe we need to call this person a tzaddik or righteous person. But there's no humility in this, that this is my place. And this is my place. It's as if, like, you know, I need to daven here because this is my place. Where's the humility? Humility means I can daven wherever I'm going to daven. The main reason for having a set spot is because that place, once you've davened there, kana hamakom kedusha. That spot has acquired for itself a holiness or a sanctity. When you daven there again, you're only adding to the kedusha points that you've established for that place. Okay, and here's the line. A quote from the Gemara in Tainus. We name it Sinu B'Tainus Tav Chaf Alef M'Beis She'amru. Lo Mekomo Shel Adam Mechabed Oso. It's not the place of the person which honors him. Elohu Mechabedus Mekomo. But it's the person who honors that place. In other words, and he goes, skip to the part which is in bold. Because the part which is not in bold talks about a person who gets very haughty about the place. But skip to the part which is in bold. He says, El Adarabo. He honors the place. God, the place is honored on account of his davening there. One can even argue that mikomo, I mean hamakom, may refer to God also, but we're talking about a makom kavua. And not that he is sanctified from that spot, because if he feels he's sanctified from that spot, zegava. That's haughtiness. The whole point of having a set place is that every time that I'm here, because of the way that I conduct myself here, I don't get confused and I don't get lost from external influences, and I don't get And I don't get flustered in my davening. And that place helps his davening go up, and it shows that he is humble. Okay, but again, it's about the conduct of the person in that place. So, and that's the emphasis that I'm trying to bring out. That if a person comes along and says, "Oh, this is my seat, this is my seat," that's not humility. If that's the way a person feels, and that's the way a person wants to conduct himself, then show up early, and then you work things out before davening, and make sure this is your seat, and then your tefillah is of course elevated. But making a big deal about the seat, as opposed to what I'm supposed to do in this seat, that's the opposite of what the tzlach is talking about. The tzlach is saying that we need to conduct ourselves properly in the seat. That's what makes makom kavua, something which has kedusha, holiness, sanctification, and something which is uplifting to the davening. It's a lot of very important ideas here, which I summarize below. Having a set place to daven is an imitation of Avraham Avinu. Even more important than a kavua seat is a kavua shul, as we saw from the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. Within four amos, as we saw in the Mishnah Berurah, is considered one domain. And more important than focusing on the import of a specific seat is how one conducts oneself in shul. Okay, the next page is Tircha de Tzibura, and I actually summarized the points of Tircha de Tzibura here. Yes?
How do you respond if you're coming to shul, this shul and the other shul, and you're taking somebody's seat, he says you're taking my seat, he comes in 5 minutes later, you're in my seat?
Okay, we're going to get to that. That's part of the last section. The question was how you deal with somebody who says to you, you're in my seat. Okay, all right, we'll deal with that. Summary of points in Tircha de Tzibura. So I'm going to look at some of them inside, but I just want to see the points that are summarized there, some of which are very interesting. But anyway, number one is that the chazan shouldn't schlep, that the chazan should be very careful. And it's sometimes, for example, somebody who's a shaliach tzibur, when he davens by himself, he has a long shmon esrei. Let's say somebody who davens a 6-minute shmon esrei, but the congregation has a 3-minute shmon esrei. Okay, and they're waiting for Chazaras HaShatz to take place, and this guy is going on and on and on. So the Chazan, he has to actually shorten his davening when he's serving the congregation. Okay, so that's on the one hand, on a personal level. Actually, I think that's... that's actually number two. The Chazan shouldn't schlep, that he shouldn't stretch out the davening unnecessarily. If his davening is beautiful, people take him for the... You know, they send him up there because his davening is so nice and it takes a little longer, that's one thing. But to go on and on and on to the point that everyone's saying, oh, here he goes again, that is not appropriate. But if the davening is so beautiful that everybody loves it, or most people love it, then that's not considered schlepping. He shouldn't go back if he misses something. Okay, the classic example of this, and it's in the sources which I gave you, is let's say it's Rosh Chodesh, and the Chazan misses Yalav Yavel, either in his quiet Shmona Esrei, which is much less of a problem because he's about to repeat Shmona Esrei anyway, or even if he misses it in the Chazaras HaShatz and nobody catches him, he shouldn't go back. Normally, we'd say you missed it. Then you have to repeat the Shmona Esrei. He doesn't do that because it's a Tircha Ditzibura. And there are things that he can fall back on. The fact is he's about to lead Hallel. The fact is he's going to say Musaf. So he doesn't go back for those kinds of things. He shouldn't force himself on the Tzibur. It goes back to what I mentioned before, just a second. Shouldn't force himself on the Tzibur if he thinks he's all that and that he's got the most beautiful davening and everything else. He shouldn't force himself on the Tzibur. He shouldn't get up there to daven if people don't want him to be doing that. Yes, sir? Oh, yeah, I mean, there may be that exception. I didn't see that specifically because I wasn't looking at the laws of Rosh Hashanah in preparing for this, but that you may be correct. But hopefully we're on top of that and we catch that earlier. If it happens in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz, if it happens much later, I don't recall. Okay, but you may be right. Okay. Concern associated with walking up and down from the bima when getting an honor. Okay, so it's less so when walking down from the bima, but when somebody gets an aliyah, they're supposed to take the shortest route to get up to the shulchan where the aliyah is going to take place because everybody's waiting for them. As a matter of fact, there is a suggestion, since most people typically know that they're going to be getting an aliyah, is that before their name is called up, they should already be walking and they should wait. And only when the gabbai says Ya'amod, then they actually step into the batter's box and be ready for the aliyah. But they should already be moving in order to prevent tircha ditzibura. Okay, even number four, which is concern associated with covering the Torah between aliyahs, which is the last pieces in this section, in the very bottom left. So, if you take a look in the very bottom left, actually, we'll read that one inside. So it talks about how if a person gets an aliyah, the person looks at the pasuk and then makes the bracha, and then afterwards the person rolls the Torah and makes the bracha. The Rama there says it's the fourth line in the very last section, Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim, Hilchos Kriyas Sefer Torah, Siman Kuf Lamates. The Rama, it's the fourth line in the middle. He says, "V'shash Mevarech Bracha Rishona." When the person is making the first bracha, Yafoch Panav El Atzad, he should turn his head to the side. So if the person knows it by heart, then the person should say it by heart. But that's why most shuls, like we have it. Yeah, the bracha is on the side of where the Torah is. And this way, lo yehi nirak mevarach when the Torah, so it doesn't look like the person is making the brachas or reading them in the Torah. V'nirali diafoch panav l'tzad smolo. And the Rama says, and I also think that a person should turn to the left. I've actually seen shuls where if you take the shulchan here, they have the brachos like on a stand or something like that over here so that the person actually turns to the left. So if a person knows the brachos, they turn to the left. More convenient in places where you don't have that. We can't do that here. It's just logistically unsound. So we put it to the right. It doesn't really matter where you turn, but the point is that it's clear that you're not reading the brachos from the Torah. Anyway, the next one, Miss Ifhei, Nagu l'chasos haksav besuder, the custom is to cover the text of the Torah with a handkerchief, with a cloth, ben gavra l'gavra, between the aliyahs. And the Rama says, in our lands, we roll the Torah, and that's all that needs to be done. Okay, so in other words, one way or another, the letters of the Torah should not be exposed between aliyahs. But take a look at the Taz. The Taz says the following. Nagul chasos, on the words that say we should cover the writing of the Torah, but leave the Torah open... He says, "V'hi psucha, sheperish v'hi psucha, that the Torah should still be open." V'kasav al zeh Rama, shemim medinos elu nagu shimigulelas. And the Rama said, "No, it shouldn't be open; it should actually be closed." Ve'ein tzarech kisui besudar. And you don't have to cover it with a handkerchief or with a cloth, whatever it's called, in between aliyahs. Ve'osan anogin legola ben gavra legavra. And those who have the custom to roll it between aliyahs, ve'achakach manichan aleha kisui, and then after they've rolled it, they put a cover on it as well. He tircha yisera, ve'ein lasos tircha. It's an additional burden, and you shouldn't do that. Okay, in other words, what's the point? The point is that between aliyahs, we don't want the letters exposed. So either you have the Torah open and the cloth covering the letters, or you have the Torah closed, and therefore the letters are covered. How long does it take to take out this thing here and put it over the Torah and take it off when it's rolled? Half a second. It takes no time. But even that half a second, even that no time, is something that the Taz is concerned about. Which is why when people tell me that davening takes too long, if they say that, davening is schlepped out. So my answer is always the following. We don't waste time. We move things along. If things take a little bit of time, fine. But it's moving. It's the spaces. It's the gaps. It's the dead air, to use a radio term. That's the tircha d'tzibura, and that's what the Taz is talking about, and that's the concern which we need to have. But if davening is moving, then it's not considered tircha d'tzibura. It's only when time is being wasted. Okay. In the interest of time, I'm not going to read through these sources, but everything which I summarized before is in these sources in one form or another. Okay, let's turn the page. Okay, getting to the question that Mr. Lehman had before. The question of relating to others during davening. Okay, so the one about the seat we're going to get to. Okay, so there's a Mishnah in Brachos, the second chapter, the first Mishnah, which talks about relating to people during the recitation of Kriya Shema. Okay, now I think that we might all agree that during the Shema is probably not the best time to be talking to somebody. But the Mishnah actually addresses it. What happens if somebody comes in, you're in the middle of Shema, and you want to say hello to the person. Or the person says hello to you. Maybe they don't know that you're in the middle of davening. Or maybe they haven't seen you in a while. Maybe they just always wish you a good morning. So this is what the Mishnah says. It's not the first two lines are not as much. It just gives an example. A person is reading the Torah, and it becomes time to recite the Shema. They happen to be reading the paragraphs of the Shema. Then if you have in mind to fulfill your obligation of the Shema, then you're yotze your mitzvah. Okay. Now in the middle of the second line in the Hebrew, baprakim. If you're in the breaks, in other words, between paragraphs, shalom mipnei hakavod umeshiv. Then you can give greeting to somebody out of respect and return a greeting. Uve emsa, but if you're in the middle of a section, if you're actually in the middle of a chapter, shol mipnei hayira, then you can only greet somebody out of fear as opposed to out of respect. Okay, in other words, fear is presumably a higher level of why you would need to relate to somebody. Okay, umeshiv, and you can respond to somebody if they say hello to you. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint is be'emsa shol mipnei hayira. In the middle of your own paragraph, you can say to somebody, you can give somebody a greeting out of fear. Umeshiv mipnei hakavod. Now, fear, by the way, is not a good word. It's really reverence. Right. I was about to say it's reverence. Okay, reverence. In other words, your rebbe or something like that. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes in and inadvertently greets you or interrupts you,
mm-hmm.
and what is the fear on the part of the interrupted?
No. So that's what I'm saying. Fear is just a translation of the word yira. I don't think it means fear like you're afraid. Right. It could be. I mean, there is a tale that I just actually just read this one to my daughter. The art school has these bedtime Jewish storybooks. So there's a classic tale about, I don't even know if, I think the person is identified, I don't remember the name, but he was davening Shmoneh Esrei, and some Roman officer came along on a horse and started talking to him and saying, hey, greet me. And the guy doesn't respond because he's in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. And then when he finishes, the officer waits patiently and he says, you better have a good explanation for why you didn't answer. And he says, well, if you're talking to the king, and I came along and said hello to you, would you respond to me? And he says, no, the king would kill me. He says, well, I'm talking to the king of kings. Okay, so that's Shmona Esrei. This is talking about Shema. Okay, so yes, that's one kind of example. But I think what they're talking about more is somebody for whom you have a reverence, such as a Rebbe, such as somebody you respect in a great manner. But the point is that the Mishnah is giving us an answer for how you go about doing it. But I think that most people are understanding, even the Rebbe would be understanding, that if you're in the middle of davening, they're not really expecting a response. I mean, last night, we did Kiddush Levana here, and somebody came over to me. You know, the main rule in Kiddush Levana is that you have to say a bracha, and the next main rule is that when you say Shalom Aleichem to somebody, you should make sure they're not in the middle of a bracha. Okay, yeah, that you should look, what are they up to in their Kiddush Levana? Because if they're in the middle of a bracha and they have to answer Aleichem Shalom to you, then they're making a hefsek, a break in the middle of the bracha. So somebody came over to me and said Shalom Aleichem to me while I was in the middle of my bracha, and I said, one second. I finished the bracha, and then I went back to him after he had gotten his two other Shalom Aleichems, and he thought that I had responded, and I said, Aleichem Shalom. And then I made the mistake of going over to somebody, I think it was you, okay? And I said, Shalom Aleichem, hold on a second, because I looked at your page, and it looked like you were in the middle of the bracha. I said, Shalom Aleichem withdrawn, I'll go find somebody else, okay? Because that's the rule. But as far as the bracha goes, but when it comes to, I think for the most part, people understand that if somebody came over to me during davening and wanted to talk to me about something, and I said, let's talk after davening. I don't think we got to talk after davening, so we have to do that. But during davening, I think most people understand. So that's both sides should be aware of what's going on here, and that's a classic example of shul decorum. We should try not to do that. But at the same time, we're going to see in a few minutes which are the parts of davening where it is permissible to talk and where is it not permissible to talk. Okay, Shema is a great example of where one shouldn't really be talking. I think we understand that, but we can understand as well that between the different paragraphs, hey, maybe there's something to be said that a hefsek is not as terrible as in the middle of one. Okay, people who are talking during davening, how do we relate to them? Okay, this is a very difficult one because as has been mentioned many times from this pulpit, telling somebody to be quiet is rude. Telling is rude, and it's not very nice. At the same time, the person is disturbing your davening, and the person is very wrong. So there are different solutions which people have, and of course, from a halachic standpoint, I think the only thing that I can tell you is just try to be menschlich about it. Once I mentioned that I would much prefer that people talk to the person who's talking and say, you know, excuse me, I come here to have a quiet davening, and I greatly appreciate if you can help make that happen. That is one thing which would be appropriate. Some people have like a little card printed up which says exactly that on a card and say, you know, hand it to the person. I'm part of a group that has committed to a quiet davening. Can you please respect that? And I think that people, of course, should be respectful. What I shared with you here is the prayer of the Tosis Yontif. For those who talk during davening, as the tale goes, he had a dream that the Gezeros of Tach V'Tat, the Chmelnitsky massacre time, happened on account of the fact that people were talking during davening. And so as a result, he composed this. That God who blessed our forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, Shlomo, he should bless those who guard their mouth and tongue from speaking during prayers. The Holy One, blessed be he, shall guard him from every trouble and distress and from every plague and illness, and he shall be subject to all the blessings written in the Torah of Moshe and all the prophets and scriptures, and he will merit to live in healthy children whom he shall educate, to nurture them, to become Torah scholars, marry them off, and educate them to do good deeds, and he shall eternally serve Hashem truthfully. Amen. So I guess essentially what I'm suggesting is pray for those who talk during davening. Because if they're talking during davening, then they don't understand the gravity of the davening in which they're engaging. And maybe a prayer like this should be to their merit. Now when it comes to people who pray too loudly, I've had some people talking to me about this of late. And so I started to do a little bit of research. Now I think that most of the stuff which is before you, and it's all in Hebrew and English, it's in Siman, Kuf Aleph, mostly in the Shulchan Aruch, and of course the commentaries thereof. So it's mostly talking about davening Shmona Esrei. In other words, it's talking about tefillah. Tefillah, the word itself sometimes refers to davening bichlal, like all of davening. and sometimes it refers specifically to Shmona Esrei. But there are some salient points here which are important to note. And let's take a look at them. We'll just look first at the tour. Okay? Tanya Mashmir Kolo B'Tfilasor is a Miktani Emuna. This is unbelievable. Somebody who davens very loudly during davening, or during Shmona Esrei, is of a person of little faith. Because the person is demonstrating a flaw in their faith that says that God can't hear quiet tefillah. Now, when it comes to Shema, now for example, there's some aspects of Shema that must be said out loud. And I've talked about this before in a class about the recitation of Shema. Excuse me. For example, you can't say the letter Zion whispering. You can't do it. Try saying the letter Zion with the Z whispering. It's impossible. It will come out as an S, a whispered S. And so the words like Tizkiru and Zonim, they have to be articulated aloud, because otherwise you're not doing it properly. And there are other, and the Shulchan Aruch, I don't remember the Siman in the Shulchan Aruch, that talks about this when it comes to the laws of Shema. But there are a number of examples that the Shulchan Aruch talks about when it comes to Shema, which just need to be articulated, and they need to be said more slowly, because otherwise the davening itself is becomes flawed. But when it comes to this, Hamagbia Kolo B'Tfilasom, just continuing in the tour here, one raises his voice during the davening, Harezim Nevi'a Yashaker, is included amongst the false prophets, Tichsibahu Kiruba Kol Gadol. That's what Eliyahu Anavi said to the Nevi'a Habal. He said, call out in a loud voice. Maybe this way your idol, your idolatry will hear you. And there are those who say that one's voice should not be heard during tefillah. It's because it should be silent to the point that even your own ears shouldn't hear it. They bring a proof from the Tosefta, who notes, we learn from Chana, who taught us about quiet tefillah, that her voice could not be heard at all. So the Gemara says, rather, we shouldn't hear it loud. We shouldn't hear your voice. In other words, others shouldn't hear your voice. But to your own ears, it can be heard. Okay, so what does that mean? It means a very undertone kind of whisper. Okay, so saying the words with your mouth, because that is proper tefillah, but that it shouldn't be too loud. It shouldn't be disturbing other people's davening. And logic dictates that a person hears to one's own ears, because then a person can concentrate better. And if you can hear it, if you can hear what you're saying, then you can concentrate better on the words. But a person shouldn't daven in the heart. It shouldn't be that your mouth isn't moving at all. It shouldn't be that it's all in your mind. A person should cut the words, so to speak, with one's lips. And a person should hear it in one's own ears and shouldn't say it too loud. Okay, look at the very end. And he says, this is all talking about when you're davening by yourself in your house. So if you're in your house, you shouldn't even be too loud. Certainly in a congregation, when you have other people around to whom you could be distracting and disturbing, a person shouldn't be too loud either. So, certainly for Shmona Esrei, but I don't think it's so far-fetched to make a stretch to the rest of davening. Okay? So I have given you ammunition. You can take this booklet and you can give it to the person and say, please read this. Okay? I'm very serious. I started putting a whole thing together because some people asked me. No, listen, I don't think it's ever appropriate to be rude to somebody. But I have heard people say, you go to, over to somebody and you say to the person, excuse me, your davening is really loud, it's disturbing me. That person gets angry and rude. Well, that's not excusable either. Okay, it's very not nice to behave that way, to be disrespectful to people when they're asking kindly. Now, listen, there are yeshivas where the custom is that everybody davens out loud. And it's not a competition of who's going to be louder than the other, but that's what people do. Well, if that's the culture, that's the culture. That's a very different ballgame. Yeah, I mean, when I was in yeshiva, there was a guy who davened next to me. He was very, very loud. So what did I do? I davened louder than him. Drown him out. But you can get away with that in yeshiva. You can't do that in a shul where that's not the culture, where that's not the way people function. So I think it's important to know what's correct. And obviously, this is why I'm giving a class like this, because how many people study this? How many people know that you know, I mean, a lot of people, you know, intuitively know that I'm going to daven for me, and I'm going to daven for my family, but I'm going to do it quietly, and I'm going to be respectful to everybody around me. And if I'm going to do it a little louder, it's going to be just for my ears to hear. Many people know that. Many people intuitively get that. But it's in the halacha. So now it's your job to educate the person as respectfully as you can. Okay, well, you can also walk away from the person. I think that's also an option in the event that the person doesn't get it. Listen, I'm not going to get bogged down in it. I'm trying to stick to a clock. I hear what you're saying, but I don't think it's, as I said before, and I'm going to go back to that, and that's actually why I brought the next piece, which is from the Haftorah, from Parshas Balak, and it's three psukim in the sixth chapter of Micha, and that is this. The prophet says, okay, and this is for those who ask us to stop talking or to lower the volume. Okay, so exactly what you're talking about, this is for the other side. Okay? With what shall I come before the Lord? Bow before the Most High God. Shall I come before Him with burnt offerings, with yearling calves? Will Hashem be pleased with thousands of rams, with myriad streams of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the food of my body for the sin of my soul? Right, am I going to be Mr. High and Mighty in my most lofty prayer that I'm going to give to God, and it's going to be as loud as possible so that that I can pierce the heavens? Is that what God wants? So what does Micha say? No, Yigidlecha Adam Atov. He has told you, O man, what is good. Ma Hashem Doresh Mimcha. What does the Lord demand of you? But to do justice, Kimasos Mishpat, Ahavas Chesed, love, loving kindness. And here's the key line with respect to davening: Hatznei Aleches Im Elohecha. Walk discreetly with your God, be tzanua. Somebody who is loud in the davening is not, again, if it's the culture, it's a different story. But if it's not the culture, it's not tzanua. And I think that person, in one way or another, needs to be told. But of course, it should be told in a respectful manner. Okay, the next question which we were going to be looking at is, when is talking in shul permitted by the halacha? When is talking in shul forbidden by the halacha? Okay, now there is a chart that I remember seeing as a kid in various sidurim, in the back of a siddur, and in some copies of the Mishnah Berurah. I actually Googled it. I wanted to see if I could find it. And in the midst of Googling that, I came across this article, which I think is comprehensive, and it spells out what the chart says. And it's in English, and I gave you the source on the internet. He has all of the footnotes in the back, which are small, but you can certainly look it up on the internet, and the internet's in big letters. So you can always magnify your screen. And he talks about the times when it is appropriate it's never appropriate, but when it is not forbidden to interrupt the davening with talking. Okay, just a couple of examples. Take a look here. Between Yishtabach and Baruch Hu, it's permitted to talk for a pressing mitzvah need only. Okay? Let's see. After Shemona Esrei, okay, so I'm almost at the bottom of the page. It's forbidden to talk if it will disturb the concentration of others who are still davening. Okay, implication: if it's not going to disturb anyone, it's not forbidden. You're done with your Shemona Esrei. Okay, Between Chazaras Hashatz and Tachnun, it is inappropriate to talk because that one should lead right into the other. Between Tachnun and Kriyas HaTorah, there is no specific prohibition against talking. In other words, the train that starts with Pesukei Dezimra and goes through Brichas Kriyas Shema and Shema and Shmoneh Esrei, which leads up through Tachnun, that's one unit that really shouldn't have an interruption, except for under extreme circumstances, as we saw before. But once the Tachnun is over, then there isn't the prohibition. I can't point to a chapter or verse that says you're not allowed to talk at that point during davening, etc. I mean, you can read through this, but the key point is that he says it in the beginning and he says at the end is that people need to come to an awareness. Like, why are we here? Why are we here? We're here to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We're here to talk to God. And if we're here to talk to God, then talking to others has no place. There's a sign which appears in a lot of shuls in Israel for sure, but even not outside of Israel, which says in Hebrew, "Imbata le beit haknesset le daber la ayin telech kishetitzarech leitpalel." If you've come to the shul to talk, where are you going to go when you need to daven? And that's an important thing to bear in mind. It's an important. I mean, it's like a nice, cute little aphorism, but it's true. It's true that if the shul is a place where people need to socialize during davening, then where are you going to go when you really need to daven? Okay. Are announcements considered an interruption to the davening? So I think that they're not. I'm just going to tell you a very quick story that happened when I was in. It's not a story. It's just it's an insight that I learned when I was in the Smicha program in YU. I grew up going to Camp Monk, and in Camp Monk we used to have these field day teams. And the field day teams, one year was like Borough Park versus Brooklyn versus Flatbush. You know, one year was Stiebel versus Shul. So in the cheer, you make fun of the other team name, and then you put yourself up. So one of the ways that Stiebel made fun of Shul is that you guys are announcing the pages all the time. Okay, you know, whatever, silly stuff. But I remember when I was in the Smicha program in YU, so Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, he was the instructor for the homiletics class. And one time, I don't remember how it came up, but the idea of announcing pages was raised. And some of the guys in the room started to snicker about it because, you know, like we all know the page. What's the big deal? And Rabbi Lookstein said, quote, "Announcing pages is not conservative, it's not reform, it's Jewish." And he's 100% right. And I actually talked about this once here in Shul, because there were some people who were complaining, why are you announcing pages? What are you doing that for? And I thought there were 3, 4, 5 people who needed it. I got over 20 people came over to me and said, thank you for announcing pages. It's very helpful. I need it. And that to me is, it's a mandate. We announce pages because it helps people who don't know how to follow the sitter be on the right page. And so it's not an interruption. It enhances the davening. It's very important. The last thing which I have here is an emotional argument, although I think it should be intuitive, but a lot of people forget. And I shared this actually when it happened in shul, but a lot of people were not here. And I think it's important to read. The top says it all. The author of this blog post, Daniel Lansky, now Olav Shalom, was 40 when he died on August 25th, 2016. On June 8th, he had a blog. And the name of his blog, I don't even remember. It says, "Every Tree is Heard." He had this blog entry. This is it. Okay, you can read it. It's the blog entry that he wrote. "Am I scared? I am." Obviously, his prognosis was not getting any better. He lived in Baltimore. Actually, I know somebody who was a friend of his for a very long time. One of my friends in Hollywood, Florida, and he talks here about how. Take a look right before the line, which is clearly my focus, right in the middle, in bold and in capital letters. That was his bold and his capital letters. Okay. He says, "In a few days, I'm going to be having my first scans since I started treatment. Those scans will show what Hashem wants to be seen. No more, no less. So here I go. I'm going to ask you for what I need from you." Actually, I really meant to go back one line before. take a look at the end of the previous paragraph, okay, where he says, "It's torturous being in a position where I need something from someone." So now the second to last line at the end, he says, "Now is not the time for me to think of me. I have a wife, I have 3 little kids, and I have cancer. We need your tefillos." And what's his point? "Shut your phone off before entering shul, please. There is nothing that can't wait. Respect the makom tefillah. Don't put it on vibrate. Don't silence the ringer. Simply turn it off, please. I wish this could be a rule in every shul. Before entering, make sure your phone is off." Now, I can't find any place in the Shulchan Aruch that says that you shouldn't have your phone on during davening. I can't find it. It doesn't exist for obvious reasons. Okay, but I will tell you that at every time the phone goes off in shul, and you know, we even had somebody here on Shabbos who had a phone which went off, I think, on Friday night, and the gentleman, you know, ran right out of shul. But generally, obviously, that's not a problem. But during the week, it's a problem all the time. And nobody's immune from it if you carry your phone with you, unless you silence it and turn it off. Now, I mentioned when I spoke about this in shul that I don't agree that there is nothing that can't wait. There are some people who are in Hatzala. There are some people who have ill relatives, an expectant father whose wife is due any moment. You know, he needs his phone on. I mean, there are circumstances where there are things which can't wait. Medical emergencies, for sure. And with a person who can actually do something about it. But I think that in general, if a person is not in such a circumstance, at the very minimum, to turn the phone off, even better, at the very minimum, to turn it on vibrate, even better during chakras, throw it into your talus bag and shut the zipper. You know, unless you're expecting an emergency because of the circumstances which I outlined, then he is right. And it's also basic decency to your fellow man. Nobody who is davening wants to hear Yenim's phone go off, and nobody wants to hear your phone go off. Nobody wants to hear my phone go off. So if you have to bring your phone to shul and you can't leave it in your car, just bring it into shul. But I think it's a very important thing for shul decorum, for people to recognize and realize that when a shul goes off, and even if it vibrates, it's distracting to others. And it's distracting to you. You know, your phone is, okay, I'll look at that later. I'm not going to, text. That's not what we're here for. If we're here to talk to the Rabbanu Shel Olam, a phone, even if you don't use it, is a distraction, and it's important for us to remember that. So we've gotten into the habit of making an announcement before Mincha. You know, please turn off your phone. I don't know if that announcement is made before Shacharis. It should be made before Shacharis. I don't know who needs their phone at Shacharis. I mean, you know, it's 7:30. Unless you're going to the supermarket afterwards and you need your phone, I don't know who needs their phone at shul in Shacharis. But these are things which we need to bear in mind. So overall, obviously, shul decorum boils down to a basic decency for your fellow man. And that means not to disturb. And even if you're talking to somebody who wants to talk during davening, guess what? All the people around you don't want to talk during davening. So it's a basic decency that needs to be had in our mind for what it means to create an environment which is open for tefillah. And all the other things which we talked about, whether it's makom kavua, tircha tzibura, that I don't need to be such a stickler about my place because my place is the shul or my place is within an area. That's what it means to have shul decorum, that we're not causing rift between anybody. We're hopefully creating an environment which is conducive to davening for everybody, that everybody can feel comfortable, and everybody can feel comfortable. Yes, one person feels comfortable only davening aloud. Okay, well, you have to realize that it's not just about you. And I can't imagine that anybody who's davening quietly is bothering the guy next to him. How come you're not davening out loud? Okay, I've never heard that complaint. So what we have to be mechazik one another and mechazik ourselves, that we can create an environment where the shul decorum is paramount in all ways, so that the davening could be something which is beneficial to us all. Yes, sir. Okay, so the question was about people who are learning during davening or during Chazar HaShats.
Or looking at their cell phone.
Looking at their cell phone. So all these people who are doing those things, that's their problem, if in fact it's a problem. Okay, looking at their cell phone, I've already addressed. I think it's a distraction. It's the wrong place. As far as the learning goes, the Shulchan Aruch actually disagrees with what you said, because it says that if a person who's known to be a Talmud Chacham comes in and gives every indication that he's not paying attention to the Torah reading or to Chazar HaShatz because he's learning, then he's allowed to do so because people know who he is and people know what he's doing. If it bothers you that the other person is doing that, okay, I'm sorry that it bothers you. That's their choice. It's between them and the Rabbanu Shel Olam. But if you really have an issue, then talk to them about it and find out. But not during davening. Hey, you need to pay attention. That's not your business. If they're not disturbing you, and somebody who's reading a sefer shouldn't be disturbing you, somebody who's reading a phone, yeah, they're wrong, but they shouldn't be disturbing you if they're quiet. If they go, ha ha ha, oh, that's a hilarious video, that's disturbing, and they shouldn't be doing that during shul, which we all agree. But if they're not disturbing you, because they're just reading stuff on their phone, then it's not your problem. Okay, you want to have a conversation with them, if they'll hear you, you know, good luck. But the main thing that I'm hoping to get out of this tonight with the shul decorum is that each of us needs to take care of our responsibilities and be respectful of everybody else around us. And that is what shul decorum is all about. Realizing that you're part of a group, part of a chevra, who hopefully through the tefillah which we're producing, are achieving the goal of creating a makom kadosh and a makom that is designated for tefillah, in which everybody who comes can feel comfortable, and hopefully our tefillahs together can.